Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on the September the 23rd on the West Coast and September the 24th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We would also like to welcome those not just listening on BBSRadio.com, but also on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. And I hope you enjoy tonight's show, because this is your favorite guest over at Wind Talkers. And I should say host also. Number one show on Wind Talkers Radio Network, A Marine's Disquisition. Tonight's guest is a former U.S. Marine, if you didn't know, from 1967 through 1977. He hosts his own show on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on blogtalkradio.com. He's also a researcher, an electronic engineer, a realtor, and quite a whiz with your computer. When your computer's not working, he's the computer doctor. And he's my regular Thursday night guest. Welcome to the show tonight, my good friend, Drew Malone Raines III. Drew, welcome.
Hey, hey, hey! Welcome, welcome, welcome to all my Marines around the world. Semper Fi, we're having fun. I've been up since 0400 this morning.
Me too. Maybe even before that.
I didn't get it. I didn't even have an opportunity to take a nap today. Can you believe that? I've been running around my head, chopped off, trying to chase it and find out where it was at.
Well, Drew, I got to listen to a little bit of radio today, and of course, most radio, if you're in your car or listening to, let's say, a stereo system as opposed to a computer where you can pick up internet radio, you get mainstream spin on a lot of issues. And I found it rather interesting today that mostly the talk shows on the Fox networks actually are claiming that the and I'm going to paraphrase this in a way, that the Tea Parties are becoming the property of the Republican Party. Now, in other words, the Tea Parties are conservative, therefore the Tea Party members should vote for Republican candidates. And, of course, everyone who has surfaced from the primaries, especially a couple of women who have decided to run as Republicans and actually are gaining ground and scoring big-time points, are the objects of sex scandals or witchcraft scandals, or, you know, the usual spin. Leave it to the mainstream media to start attacking the character of the candidates, while we witness over 500 senators and congressmen and people in the administration and all the bureaucracies which make up government embezzle trillions of dollars and run this country into the ground. Now, I personally don't think most people in the Tea Parties stand for Republicanism. In fact, the Republican Party gave us 9/11, as did the Democrat Party. So I say we vote them all out. What do you say, sir?
I got a fire ant pit for all of them. Vote them out, send them to me, and I'll put them in a fire ant pit. Liars, thieves, pedophiles, crooks. That's what I feel. That's how I feel. Every last one of them. There may be an exception of about four or five. But that's how I feel. America needs, and bottom line is, why aren't those four or five in the House of Representatives and three or four in the United States Senate, why aren't they out there standing up and saying, we need an investigation on 9/11. We need an investigation on the Murrah bombing. We need an investigation on Waco. We need an investigation on Ruby Ridge. Our FBI department is out of control. Our CIA is out of control. Our National Reconnaissance Office is way out of control. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you about the other 14 or 15 other agencies out there, including the Food and Drug Administration. Mm-hmm. They're directly out of control.
And the Treasury.
I'm so proud of you, Don, to bring up the idea that there's some Republicans out there that are screaming about this, because I prepped something for you to play tonight from a senator on the GOP ticket from Connecticut, and they've got the Kennedy family all in an uproar. And this is Linda McMahon. Or McMahon, who's
McMahon,
a Republican.
McMahon, I think. Yeah, McMahon.
McMahon, who's come out utilizing John Fitzgerald Kennedy, President John Fitzgerald Kennedy's speech back in 1963. And if you would allow me, I would attempt to bring this ad clip out. It's only about a minute and a half.
We don't have a minute and a half, Drew. No, go ahead. I'm just kidding.
I'm gonna pull 5 minutes out of my show. Give it to you.
No. Please go ahead and play. Go ahead.
All right. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Senator, running in Connecticut, her ad campaign, and my personal viewpoint, the greatest president in this past century, John Fitzgerald Kennedy. August 13th, 1963.
America should come from a recession. And if we can take the proper action in the proper time, this can be the most important step we could take to prevent another recession. That is the right kind of a tax cut. Every dollar released from taxation that is spent or invested will help create a new job.
A good idea then, a better idea now.
I'm McMahon, and I approve this message.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that a great message?
That wasn't even a minute and a half.
31 seconds.
Yeah. I was going to say it was about a half a minute. Yeah, there you go. All right. Yes, it drives the point home. Well,
I get a minute and a half out of you, I know I could play 31 seconds.
You know, when there's a conspiracy to commit murder and the murder is committed by conspirators, you know, I care not about statute of limitation. We need an investigation into the JFK assassination and the John F. Kennedy Jr. assassination as well. Is it Paul Weldon or Carl Weldon? I can't remember his first name. The politician from Minnesota who had some goods on a lot of people a few years back, if you remember, he was killed in a plane crash.
There was another
congressman from the state of Ohio who was supposed to go before one of the committees about financial corruption. He was killed in a plane crash. You know, this thing about plane crashes and suicides and heart attacks and liver cancer and bone cancer, it's old hat now. It's becoming like a broken record.
All the way back when the government was able to, I shouldn't say government, the elitist, with Prescott and Bush behind the scenes under the soon-to-be I shouldn't say soon to be, Lyndon Baines Johnson administration murdered Hal Bob from Louisiana in a plane crash in Alaska. And his body and his pilot, who was far superior than any other pilot in Alaska. He was a far superior Bush pilot than any other Bush pilot in Alaska. Their plane went missing. They've been missing since 1968. He wanted a major investigation on what? The assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, and the black man.
Yeah, Martin Luther King Jr., that he came to mind also, as well as Bobby, while you were talking.
Oh, he's yes. All three. I just thought I'd give you your, let you put the 2 cents in there. And it's all about free mind, free your mind in a free society and secret governments. And if you've got, if you'll let me give you about 3.5 minutes of my show to your show, I got a clip on the free society from the man himself.
Okay, go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its means to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. But we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is spreaded, no secret is revealed. So it is to the printing press, to the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Free and independent, ladies and gentlemen. And you think you're free? Don, I got news for you. There's an old saying about there about freedom. John Fitzgerald Kennedy hit the nail right on the head with that speech, and his family, his nephews, his niece, his own daughter, ignore his philosophy because it rhymes with the constitutionalists out there, the people of the Tea Party that are attempting to bring constitutional government and liberty back to America. And people ask me why I'm willing to stand here and let them come after me. Why I don't make a lot of money. Ladies and gentlemen, I live on less than $250 a month. The greatest thing that ever happened to me was the fact that my Marine Corps retirement is going to start here within the next 4 to 6 months. And what are they going to do? Even if I just get $1,100, $1,500, what are they going to do with me when I only need $250 to $300 to live on, and I've got an extra $1,200 to fight them with? I may not be able to do the things I want to do and go overseas and visit my girlfriend and enjoy life as many of you have your lives, but I got news for you. I'm not going to give up. I'm just 110 soldier, Don Nikoloff, and I'm not going to quit. I'm going to stand here and fight. I'm going to fight all the way down to my last breath, and then I'm going to look at them as I take that last breath and spit in their face. Period. That's the way I feel.
Yeah, you're right, Drew. He hit the nail right on the head. I was thinking all we have to do is play that every night, and we don't have to do any more research. We don't have to preach to people. Just let that message sink in. And that's back in, 1962 or 63?
August 1963.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And I'm glad you said that, because I'm going to start playing that 3-minute or 2-minute and 31-second clip, and I can actually shorten it to 3 minutes. Okay? I can literally shorten that sucker to 3 minutes, I believe. Let me see here. It's 3 minutes and 32 seconds, and it looks like he doesn't. The music takes up about 31 seconds on my computer as it plays through. So I would assume. Let's see here. 22. So I'm at 22 seconds. So give me about another 6 or 7 seconds here. He starts talking at 29 seconds. So I can kill 29 seconds and 3 seconds off the end with the music at the end and 3 minutes.
Yeah, well.
And what I like about this, I can make this my intro to my show.
Yeah. Now, what you mentioned something about his relatives. You know, after his assassination.
What's sad here is Senator McMahon or McMahon, M-C-M-A-H-O-N,
McMahon,
not an A, it's an O. Senate hopeful from the state of Connecticut. And that 30-second spot in which she plays John Fitzgerald Kennedy's speech, utilizing 1963 footage, is supporting what she feels that needs to be in Congress. However, Edward Kennedy Jr. wrote her a letter, and we already know how bad Eddie Kennedy was. But Edward Kennedy Jr., who is now the senior Kennedy, wrote a letter to this Republican wannabe senator asking her to pull the ad because, quote, it falsely implies that my uncle, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, would have supported tax cuts for the same reason that she does. Using President Kennedy's image in your ads gives your tax position false legitimacy. This was written on September the 22nd or 21st and delivered to Senate hopeful McMahon on the 23rd. And she rebutted him and said in a letter reply to him, I quote, let's see, where's the quote on her? 6 degree vast difference. She wrote back that no school of economic thought advocates raising taxes in an environment in which we currently find ourselves. Therefore, I respectfully disagree that your uncle would support raising taxes in this economy. Not only will I not remove the ad, but I feel that the ad campaign should be brought to television in a television rotation. Wait a minute, Don. This ad that she's running wasn't played on television. It was being played on radio. How in the world did the younger Kennedy here, Eddie, come forth and say that, you know, he comes out and he says falsely implied, you know, he says that arguing that falsely implies that J.F. Kennedy would support the tax cuts and using, quote, using President Kennedy's image in your ad. It hasn't ran on television.
Yeah, yeah. The whole Kennedy clan, in my opinion, has been compromised for many years. Even when Kennedy was alive, Aristotle Onassis had Jackie Kennedy on his boat, on his private yacht.
And, three times!
Yeah, and JFK found out about it and told her to get off that boat immediately. Even if you have to jump off and swim.
Wait a minute, Don. You have to put a lot of beep, 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 beeps in there because he did. He used some very, very strong expletives.
Yeah, I'm paraphrasing. You know, I'm paraphrasing.
I know.
Now, you know the philosophy too, and it's clear that Aristotle Onassis was also one of the conspirators in the Kennedy assassination, just by his actions afterwards, you know the old saying, you take the man's woman, and then you take his gun. And in this case, it was Jackie Kennedy and the Pentagon. That was his gun. Okay? So,
well, let's back up and look. All you have to do is look at the assassination.
Yes.
Why in the world would a woman, husband or not, when he's assassinated next to her, why would she literally attempt to expose herself more so by trying to get out of the car instead of laying down on the floorboard? There's something in that car that we're missing.
Yeah,
and I don't know what to tell you, but I know there's just way too much cover-up going on about the assassination, and we actually have got a former CIA agent who's come out and admittedly said that there were three shooters.
Yeah, well,
and his death on his deathbed, as he was dying at the age of 95 years old, and he, as a Catholic, he wanted whatever they do for their sins, and he requested.
Okay, I lost your audio, Drew. Are you still there? Okay, we temporarily lost Drew Raines. We're going to try to see if he comes back. Drew, I don't know.
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I didn't go nowhere.
Okay, you were... You
lost me, but I'm here.
Okay, yeah. You stopped in mid-sentence, so repeat what you were saying.
I was saying that this former CIA operative admitted on his deathbed with he had requested three court stenographers or court reporters from three jurisdictions and a priest to come to his bedside when he was advised by the doctor that he had less than 24 hours to live.
Mm-hmm.
And he requested a priest and three court reporters from three jurisdictions to come to his bedside, and they were there within 4 hours of his death. The priest was there all the way up until his death.
Mm-hmm.
But he admitted that it was a conspiracy. And yet we don't have that information out there today.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that. There were more than three shooters, though. You had William Greer, the driver.
Well, I said conspirators. I meant three shooters.
Well,
he knew personally of three shooters.
Okay.
Now, I discovered the other day pictures of Prescott Bush with Eisenhower in 1957. And with there's no photographs of Prescott Bush ever being with President Kennedy. But there are pictures of Prescott Bush and George W. Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, and Prescott Bush in a conference with Lyndon Baines Johnson and FBI Director J.
Edgar Hoover
in 1964, just 4 months after John Fitzgerald Kennedy was assassinated.
Hmm. And the purpose for that meeting, do you know?
I have, the purpose of that meeting, I don't know. I'm not privy to it. You go down the rabbit hole with a spoon and you come out with a drag crane. I go out there and I start looking for the spoon and I come out of the rabbit hole with a spoon.
Yeah, you know.
But I accidentally ran across these four pictures of Lyndon Baines Johnson, Prescott Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, and the FBI director that everybody liked to love and hate, J. Edgar Hoover. In 1964, and as anybody in intelligence, anybody in military intelligence that is over the age of 50 knows for a bona fide fact that J. Edgar Hoover had secret files on everybody in Congress, in the Senate, on the Supreme Court, and anybody that wanted to run for the presidency of the United States. We're not talking about a file folder that maybe has 4 or 5 sheets of paper in it. We're talking about file folders that documented everything that person did all the way back to the time they were in the first grade and how many diapers that were used to change them on a daily basis. Edgar Hoover was thorough. And I've got a friend out there. You know her. I promote her. Her name is Melissa Hopkins. She does a radio show on Blog Talk and Wind Talkers Radio Network called, I don't know the name of it, but you can go to Blog Talk Radio and call it up, Melissa Hopkins, and her show, a political analyst show from the heart of the beast out of Washington, D.C. This brave little lady comes out to speak the truth with members of both parties that are pro-Democrat and pro-Republicans, and then she beats them to death with the truth. And she, Melissa Hopkins, has information and personal knowledge of the assassination of Kennedy because her cousin, first cousin, you know, the pilot Gary Powers,
mm-hmm.
prisoner over Russia.
Yeah, he was the U-2 pilot, right?
That was her first cousin.
Hmm.
And she made a comment to me in an IM that, quote, I think we can make an educated guess on that meeting with LBJ, George Herbert Walker Bush, his father, Prescott Bush, and the director of the FBI. Now, it's amazing that who all were at that meeting, those are the only ones in the picture, but you can see somebody standing off to the side on the right-hand side, a pair of slacks that kind of come down into the chair and a suit coat. Who was that person? The director of the CIA, maybe? Good question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. You bring to mind something regarding an FBI report that Hoover supposedly took, which is rare, but in this case, let's look at it at face value. He interviewed one George Bush, who worked for the CIA, and they said, oh, that's another George Bush. Now, George H.W. Bush claimed he didn't know or he didn't remember where he was at the time of the assassination. Anybody who was alive at that time remembers where they were. I would presume that even a 1-week-old baby would remember where he or she was at that time. Bush allegedly called the Houston FBI office and gave the name of one James Parrott. James Parrott, he said, was an activist, and he was involved with the elections board, with the Republican Party in Houston. He was a student, and he was an agitator, and he may have been responsible for the assassination and or the plot. Now, let's stop there just for a moment. Then we have a picture of Bush standing in a trench coat in front of the Texas Book Depository. Now, he says he doesn't remember where he was, but the camera that took that picture certainly remembered where he was. And then there is another still photo that I extracted from a History Channel piece where you can see in a cloud of gun smoke a Hispanic or Cuban-looking man standing on the left side of the photo, looking at the photo, Bush on the right side, or an image that looks, the spitting image of him, as much as you could see through a cloud of gun smoke, and behind him, a man dressed in a police uniform. And that man dressed in the police uniform, according to his own deathbed confession, we'll say, was Otto Skorzeny, the well-known Nazi, we could say, assassin. He was a bodyguard to Hitler. He helped get Hitler out of Germany with pilot Hanna Reich at the end of the invasion, the Russian invasion on Berlin. He took Hitler to Austria and helped him get to Argentina. And later on, made contact with him in the States. We know this. We have photographs of this. Now, Bush, we know, also is George H. Scherf, Jr., and his father, Prescott Bush, was George H. Scherf, Sr., the accountant, business manager of Nikola Tesla. There's the conduit to stealing all of Tesla's money, all of Tesla's patents and inventions, and siphoning them off or funneling them to the Nazi Party in Germany. The money laundering took place between UBC, or Union Banking Corporation, in New York. They used a bank in Holland to launder the money, and, of course, they were using I.G. Farben and Thiessen as main contributors to the Nazis and funneling the money back and forth. So these are the same connections that exist today, absolutely exist today. Now, going back to James Parrott, and this is the last thing I want to say about that. When Bush ran for president, guess who ran the campaign? James Parrott. If that isn't guilt, I don't know what is. Right
now,
there.
Let me ask you a question: Is that when Bush ran against Ronald Reagan in his second attempt when Reagan ran against Carter? Or was that when he was running against Gerald Ford in Ronald Reagan in the first attempt in 1976?
I'm not sure which one it was, but let's just
and
say.
When George Herbert Walker Bush ran in 1988 after Reagan was out of office after 8 years.
Yeah, I'd have to look back to see, but I know that James Parrott surfaced later on as being the campaign manager. So here you have somebody who's actually accusing this guy of being behind the assassination, and later on he's doing business with him. You know, I wrote about that. I'm pretty sure I wrote about that in my Deathbed Confessions article, the one where I reveal the true identity of George Herbert Walker Bush.
That was in the Three Stooges Go to Washington, my friend.
No. Bush is
in
Deathbed Confessions. Deathbed Confessions, photos.
Oh, yeah, it was. The Deathbed Confession with the photos. Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, support claims that George... George H. Scherf, Jr. was the 41st U.S. president. That's the name of the article.
That was his real name.
Yes. And even after I wrote that article, by the way, I found a Ellis Island document showing that one George H. Scherf came into the United States saying he was from Dürlitz, Germany. This is after I wrote the article. I found that, okay? So it's not published in the article, but we can add it verbally to it. And I can always go back and do an addendum to this. Now, Drew, I've got a surprise for you.
Wait a minute here. Let me go take my heart medicine.
We've got a caller here that has some information.
Oh, I thought she was going to play. I thought she was going. You were going to play something. Go ahead.
Okay, caller, would you identify yourself, please?
Hey, Drew, it's Melissa Hopkins calling.
Oh, my Lord! Hey, Don, I tell you, we got a listening audience out there, and I kind of promote your show a little bit.
Well, I heard that. Thank you. I try to listen to Don's show whenever I can. I tend to be a night owl on my projects. I have 3 young boys and usually can't get anything done until after 10 o'clock at night. So I try to.
You don't have young boys. You got 3 rug rats, okay? That are the future military leaders of tomorrow. Don, let me ask Melissa one question.
All right, go ahead.
And this is for all you people in the audience out there. Because I know her 3 sons, and her oldest son's only 11. But I sent down some audio on the Constitution. Now, Melissa, your sons are devout constitutionalists, are they not?
It is amazing. They were somehow born with this gene. It is unbelievable. My 11-year-old is an avid reader of American history, and my youngest son, who is just turned eight, has read. I bought a book for my oldest son, who's 11, called A Book on the Presidents, and what it does is gives about 25 pages per president, just to give a general overview of every president. And my youngest son, who's 8, has memorized every word of that book. He knows who they were married to, what the wife's maiden name was, how many children they had, in addition to all the political history. I mean, I'm just blown away. It's just like, and he even corrected me. I was at a back to school night, and I said, William, can you talk to your teacher about how you've read this book on the presidents? And he got a little shy, and I said, well, why don't you start with an easy one? What's one of your favorite presidents? And he said, well, President Lincoln. And I thought I'd be easy on him, and I said, well, where was President Lincoln born? And he said, Kentucky. And I said, well, I think he was born in Illinois. He goes, no, Mom, it was Kentucky. And I said, okay, Mom's going to have to go back and re-educate herself. And sure enough, Lincoln was born in Kentucky and moved in his early life to Illinois.
Now, you have to have him read some of my articles, Melissa, because he's going to find out some
this
of them.
This is when he was 7, by the way.
Melissa, now, in the beginning of the show, I made a comment that your uncle was Gary Powers, the pilot, the spy pilot that was shot down over Russia and was in prison.
Cousin, he was my cousin.
Why don't you educate a few people here, like Don, and let him know the things that you know about what Gary Powers knows about the assassination relationship with Kennedy.
Okay, very few people know this. I don't think I've told you, Drew. But I'll tell the story at one story first, which shows my naivete, and then as I grew older and learned more about how sensitive this whole story was, then I became I did my own family research and learned so much more. But I grew up knowing that Gary Powers was my cousin, and that, you know, his story, being the pilot and shot over Russia and was prisoner and all these high-level negotiations to get him out. And then when he got out, he eventually became a traffic helicopter pilot for a news station in Los Angeles. And he died in a helicopter crash. Now, my family always said that he was murdered. It was not an accident. That someone had drained the gasoline from the helicopter before he took off that day, because they wanted him dead because of all the secrets he knew. So let's fast forward to when I'm 25 years old. I just moved back from Los Angeles from being an actress to working in the heart of politics in Washington. Now, here I was at a, I'm not going to name too many details just because it's a little creepy, but I was at this very well-known hotel, and they have a bar at the very top floor. And so I was telling some friends of mine about this story and how much I was reading up on this and about Gary Powers and the like, and so this man in full uniform, I couldn't recognize the different military uniforms back then, but he was a well-decorated Navy pilot, and he came over to the table and he said, I couldn't help but overhear you talking about Gary Powers. And I said, yeah, he was my cousin, and da da da. You know, I was just like spewing off, like, you know, whatever, you know, it's not that big a deal. And I was also talking about that I was studying a lot about the North Koreans. at the time. And so he says, well, I just happen to have a book here that I think you would really enjoy reading. And he gave me this huge book on the North Koreans. This would have been about 1993. And I said, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And he gave me his card, and he said, could I call you sometime? I thought, okay, you know, this is a pickup job, whatever. I said, sure, you know, why not? And so he called me like the next day, and he asked me for, this is like a Monday night, called me on a Tuesday night, asked me if he could take me to the Kennedy Center on Friday night. And I thought, this is kind of rushing things a little fast, but I thought, well, he's a Navy uniform guy, I'm sure I can trust him. I said, well, I'll meet you there. I didn't want him to pick me up, but I said, I'll meet you at the Kennedy Center. So I meet him at the Kennedy Center, and so I said, what show are we going to see? He goes, oh, we're not going to see a show. And I said, we're not? I said, well, what are you going to do? And he says, well, there's some private elevators here in the back, and there's a very private dinner being held, and I thought you might like to go. I said, okay. So not wondering what is going on, there are like three tables of eight people there. And I'll just say it was one of the former U.S. ambassadors to Russia. It was the general who helped Yeltsin make sure he won over the coup in Russia, if you remember that. So that general, yeah. And I remember that general very well.
Could I ask a question, Melissa?
Sure.
Was that former ambassador from Texas by any chance?
I don't want to say anything more because I'm a little bit scared.
Okay.
But I was seated between the ambassador and the general at the table. And my date, who I knew for 4 days, was at the opposite side of the table of me. I thought that was very strange. And so, you know, it was a big room, but only three tables. And so the ambassador, former ambassador, stood up, and he cleaned his glass, and he said, well, I just am so glad, because it looked like it was half Russian, half Americans there. And he cleaned his glass, and everybody went quiet, and he said, I'm so glad everybody could make it here tonight. And he mentioned a few names, and he said, and I want to give a toast to everyone that's here so we can finally put the Gary Powers issue at rest. And then the people cleaned their glasses and da-da-da. And so I kind of whispered across the table to my date. I said, Gary Powers was my cousin. And he was like, what? I said, Gary Powers is my cousin. And so the ambassador heard me say that. And he was still standing. And he looked shocked. And he said, Miss, did I hear you say that Gary Powers was your cousin? And I said, yeah. And he says, could you tell me who your cousin was? And I said, well, he was the famous pilot that was shot down over Russia and held prisoner of war, or prisoner, and then finally brought back to the United States, and that he had ejected from his plane. And so I'm getting nervous even telling the story. And so have you talked to Mr. Powers lately? No, I didn't tell about the ejecting part and that he died part. And I said, so I knew what he was doing, and I knew where this was going. So I got very scared, and I said, you know, that's my mom's side of the family, and we really don't talk to that side of the family very much. so I played totally stupid ditzy girl. And so then he finished this conversation. I sat through the dinner, and I just thought how weird it was. I never heard from the decorated Navy pilot again. And then I met someone about 2 years later, and told me about, that he knew the mechanic that, that was working on the, plane that was going over Russia that time. And he said something like, man, it's not good for you. It's not good for you. Don't trust anybody. Whatever you do, just eject. Just eject. And so that's what he did, obviously. And then, so then I started asking my family more questions about Gary Powers. And so my mom said that she went to the family, and she knew a lot about it. And she, my family has a letter from Gary Powers to my aunt that says, that he was doing super secret, training in Turkey. Now they got this letter much later, you know, much later than when he was there. But they finally got the letter, and it said he was doing super secret training, pilot training in Turkey. And it did involve, you know, the highest of intelligence agencies. And he says, there's the strangest guy here named Lee Harvey Oswald, and no one can figure out why he's here.
Well,
so my mom fought for years to try and get that letter. And apparently my mom's side of the family do get very scared. They say they do still have it, but they have it held in a very secret place. So how's that for weird?
Yeah, that's, well, you know, there's a connection that... There were two Connecticut senators who facilitated the paperwork and the visas to get Lee Harvey Oswald into the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That's, Drew mentioned Prescott Bush. He was one of the senators. I can't remember the other senator's name offhand, but I did quite a bit of research because of one George Demoranshild, who was a wealthy Russian aristocrat that had come to the United States and was doing business with many of the people who were the conspirators. He ended up with the obligatory suicide by holding a shotgun in his hand and blowing his brains out through his mouth. Now, this was a small man who would not have been able to perform the feat. And yet that's how he ended up. But there was obviously a Russian connection beyond Lee Harvey Oswald being there. Many question whether or not the plane was actually hit by gunfire. It could have been possible that there was some deal. This I'm just speculating, but there may have been some deal struck to where they would get the U-2 plane, even in crash condition, into the hands of the Soviets at the time, so they could develop.
Well, my understanding through the pass down was that Gary Powers was being used as a useful idiot, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and that he was intended to be killed for some reason, but it was a mechanic that told him, whatever you do, whatever happens, eject.
Mm-hmm.
And that took the U.S. and the Soviets by surprise. It was my understanding through the family.
Yes. Yeah, that was a very high altitude plane, the U-2, and it would have been very difficult to shoot it down. And then they say it was gunfire. More likely, one would fire a missile at such a plane, and he wouldn't survive.
Or there was some self sabotage.
Yes.
To the plane.
Yes. I think maybe the intention, well, maybe he had found out about Lee Harvey Oswald. Maybe that was it.
Maybe that was it. Because
yeah.
We do know that certainly during, I'm forgetting my timelines a little bit here, but Hoover would read anybody and everybody's mail. or
anybody, everybody.
Transmission
mail.
Or anything
at
his leisure.
Yeah, Drew's chiming in. You know, that brings to mind also a picture that I recently discovered online, and it's allegedly the photograph that the Congress was looking at, and there's it's a picture of Lee Harvey Oswald standing in a yard. Now, we don't know where this was, but there's a picket fence behind him. He's actually standing.
I think I've seen that picture, yeah.
Yeah, and he's standing, posing with a rifle and two newspapers. Now, I examined this photograph like I have been examining photographs of current politicians, and there are many anomalies in that photograph. Number one, it's a fake. Let's just say it's a fake. We have the typical shadows moving in the wrong direction. Shadows where they shouldn't be, shadows missing where they should be, and no print on the newspapers. He's got two. There's just two rolled up pieces of paper. Okay?
Well, how about that Barack Obama picture with his grandparents? I mean, that is so photoshopped, it's not even funny.
Yes, yes. Actually, now. Someone brought to my attention the Bush picture that I have in the article that Drew and I were talking about before you joined the call here. And that's photoshopped as well. And that explains something that I discovered in looking at other photographs of George H. Scherf, Jr. We have two different individuals that pose as the same person. Now, the one in the photograph is intended to look like the one that became the president as a young man, but he is definitely photoshopped into the picture, as is his father, George H. Scherf, Sr. And but these are the Bush personalities now. These are not the Scherf personalities, if you get my meaning. And Mengele is in this photograph, Galen, Reinhard Galen, Joseph Mengele, Otto Skorzeny. Skorzeny looks like the only person who really belongs in that photograph. Martin Bormann is holding his hands. He's wrapping his hands around what appears to be the Scherf grandmother, and we don't have her first name, although I think it may be Anna Scherf. From all the genealogical research I did, that was the only name I could come up with in Germany. They didn't expunge her records, but everyone else's are basically expunged out of all the national databases. The birth records go way, way back, hundreds and hundreds of years in Germany. And the Germans are meticulous to a fault in that regard, and they've been scrubbed from all the records. Again,
have you ever heard of the Turkish connection? Because I don't think they called it Turkey back then, but he was in just outside of Istanbul.
Well, yeah, they renamed a lot of the cities later on after World War
I. Well, that was Constantinople for a long time, but
yeah,
it was by the time they got, I don't know if it was through Freedom of Information Act or how they got it. But they finally got this letter that they never got. And
well, the Turkey
they
was
verified
a landing.
It was his handwriting, and the fact that he said that there was this man who had no purpose there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it named him Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah. Let's see.
You'd think they would have changed his name or done something, but.
Was do you know what his APO was? Was it in Izmir by any chance? Does that sound familiar?
It does sound familiar.
Okay. Turkey is one of the landing points of the Ashkenazis, from the Ban to the Man. They're also known as Khazars. They moved to Turkey and migrated into Europe from there. So that connection is a very, very old one. And it enters into the picture
that
today.
That all sounds very familiar.
Yes. Yeah. Turkey and Germany have this relationship where many Turks, even when I lived in Europe, many Turks were coming to Germany to work. And it's not that the jobs weren't there in Turkey. It's this infiltration of these groups. And Kennedy, in the first clip that Drew played, talked about infiltrators.
Mm-hmm.
You heard that, Drew, I'm sure.
I've listened to it 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, so this group of people that were behind the assassination primarily were all, for the most part, foreigners living illegally in this country, even holding political offices and working in law enforcement or working with intelligence agencies.
Well, I know this is probably a little off subject, but maybe not, but I also knew of many Jews that changed their name to very Catholic names, for example, to come through Germany and then come through London and then to the United States at the same time as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you mean Jews or Ashkenazis? There's a difference. They like the Irish names and they like Italian names. Many of the Israelis use those names.
They were Irish names.
Yeah.
Irish.
Yeah, the three I's, Israeli, Italian, and Irish. It's a pattern.
They were Irish.
I find this in the money laundering. I find this in places where people just spring up out of nowhere. And, you know, when you go back and you look at the alleged bloodlines of their genealogy, it's all bogus. There's a president or some high-powered political official that has arranged for all of those fictitious documents.
That's so funny that you say that, because one of my good friends who is an Orthodox Jew, his great-grandfather was the longtime mayor of Dublin under an assumed name.
Yeah. Yeah, it just proves the point again. Well, Melissa, I want to thank you for your call. We're going to have to start wrapping up the show here, but I appreciate the information, and I'm sure the listeners
are. I was just kind of blown away here. I was just doing some work, and I was listening to the show. And I didn't know Drew was going to be on, and then I hear his name, and then I hear you guys talking about this, and I'm like, whoa.
Well, it wasn't.
Drew talks behind Melissa's back all the time.
Yeah, it wasn't planned. It wasn't planned, but, you know, it happens that way often. So I appreciate the information. And
you're welcome.
Maybe
we'll
have you on the show as a
guest. I'm sure you can get in contact through me, through Drew, if you have other questions. There's definitely more to the story than I have, and I'm just a little too afraid to say it on air.
Well, sometimes that's the best thing to do, you know, get the story out there. We'll have you on the show next month if you're inclined to do that. We'll have Drew there. Just so you have somebody watching
a
your
comfort
back.
Tone.
Yeah,
somebody come in with a baseball bat.
Well, Melissa, good luck with your show. What is the name of your show, by the way?
It's called Straight Talk with Melissa
That's
Hopkins.
Right. That's right.
I'm a conservative, but I like to have someone from the right and the left on my show. It's not always possible.
She just lied. She just lied. She's not conservative. She's a constitutionalist.
Yeah.
I'm a constitutionalist. You know, call it conservative, call it constitutionalist, but I'm a constitutionalist at heart. That's what I am.
Yeah.
Just ask my son.
Okay, well, I appreciate the input. And you keep your powder dry, girl.
Thanks, guys. Have a good morning.
All right. Thank
you. Top of the morning to you.
All right. Drew, what a surprise, huh?
You know, if we can put this internal conflict off for about another 8 years, Melissa Hopkins is going to be well protected with three sons and a husband that are all constitutional conservatives. And her youngest son only being 8, we only have to wait. If we can put this off for about 8 more years at 16, I think he could he'd probably pick up a rifle and ding somebody at 500 yards after all the Marine buddies that he'll have in his circle of friends thinking him out of use that Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms.
Yeah.
And but as we log off, Don, I'd like to give out to all my Marines and to all you civilian guys out there, I want you all to remember Sir Francis Bacon, knowledge is power. You have to learn it. And Jonathan Wolfgang Von Goethe, none are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they are free. Remember that, ladies and gentlemen, when you go down and you register your car, you get your driver's license, and you make sure your insurance is paid, and you have given up your liberty and your responsibility and your morality for a license. To all my Marines around the world, thank you for listening. God bless. Semper Fi.
And Drew, I want to mention one thing here before I say goodnight. And I've been talking about this this past week. There's some information that has come forward. This is not rumor. This is not speculation. We've been talking about the reality of this planet having been visited by beings. We could say our cousins. In a way, or our brothers and sisters from other planets, since the beginning of time on this planet has been visited. Wendell Stevens passed away very recently, and he talked about that quite a bit. In fact, one of our listeners, Ken, sent a link to some videos in that regard. He talked about the matter-of-fact evidence that is there, and he had probably the largest collection of anyone in the whole world of photographs and accounts of all the visitations that occurred. And right now, anyone that has access to night vision goggles or night vision binoculars and a means of attaching it either to a camera or a video recorder can watch nonstop battles going on in space around planet Earth right now. We talked about this all this week. I actually, a couple of nights ago, had the opportunity to see one craft shot. And where this is occurring, all over the planet, okay? So it's not one particular location. And anyone can look up at an altitude of from 100 to 200 miles in space, you can see this going on. There is a massive invasion occurring, and there's more than one group coming in. In fact, there's another malevolent group that's trying to exert more power than what the reptilians have been trying to do. Many people in the military are probably not aware of this, Drew, but it comes from a very, very credible source. And
all right, now that you mention it, I thought you heard my Sunday show last Sunday.
No, I didn't actually.
I did a 3-hour presentation on UFOs as documented from around the world with, and the video link is on my news and views for September the 19th, 2010 at my website, amd.elequity.com. The archives are there for free. You can just click on the archives section at the top right-hand corner and click on the 19th day of September, 2010, and the video is referred to as For Your Eyes Only. Now, I'm going to recommend, I'm going to let you know that this is high-speed internet is required. This is a one-hour, 42-minute video with, and there's pictures that I've also posted there that you can go and look at videos that date all the way back into the 1880s. And I discussed on that show as a professional United States Marine Corps reconnaissance photographer that you can use an 18A color filter. That's an ultraviolet spectrum filter.
Mm-hmm.
You slap that sucker on front of a Canon EOS 40D camera, and you can shoot pictures of outer space at nighttime or daytime, whenever, and you will see hundreds of you, of what you, the listening audience, will call UFOs. I'm not trying to steal Don's thunder here, but I want to let you know something, ladies and gentlemen. Until that show, I've never gone public in admitting that UFOs exist. I know they're there. I've turned pictures over to my commanding officers from around the world. It's gotten me in trouble. I've been transferred for bringing forth pictures using an 18A color filter on an assortment of cameras that VMCJ3, VMCJ1, VMCJ2, VMFP3, VMFP32 used in places like North Carolina, El Toro, California, Iwakuni, Japan, Da Nang, Vietnam. Personal pictures taken from the top of the American Embassy in London. Personal pictures taken from the top of the embassy in Brussels, Belgium, in Munich, Germany, dating all the way back to 1971. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Drew Malone Raines III. I will not go quietly in the night. UFOs exist. They're out there, and there's not one or two or three or four. There's hundreds. And if you will pay attention, you put it on you put an 18A filter on a telescope and look into the night sky, you will literally see space battles in space where aircraft are literally appearing out of nowhere and like bees on top of a hornet that's invading a beehive. Fighters come from everywhere to fight. And who's the guy that they're fighting? I personally feel that these are the bad guys that come in, because there's so many of these other circular craft that come close to these diamond-shaped aircraft and knock them out of the sky. It's like Star Wars, Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, all right there in livid video.
Yeah.
And thank you, Don, for letting me let the audience know where I stand on what I call identified flying objects, because they come from other galaxies.
Yes, and I appreciate that, Drew. I didn't have a chance yet to listen to your archive of the show, but I intend to, and this wasn't planned. I have to say one thing, though. It's thousands of ships. Thousands.
Well, and, I say hundreds, because that's all I can get in my viewfinder at a time.
Well, I'm speaking about the reality. Now, I asked the question, who knows this? How high up does this go? This is the group that used to call themselves MJ-12 or the Majestic 12, and they just call themselves MAGIC now. And this is international in scope, but these are the black ops groups. And I was told likely the military doesn't know that this is going on, and they should know that it's going on. They should know. Certainly, everybody on this planet has a right to know this. This information is being withheld from the public. It's going to lead to more of the truth coming out about a lot of things, especially where all this money that they're stealing is going. You know, they're secretly developing these programs. And I asked another question. Why is it that no one is attacking the International Space Station? It's out there in space like a sitting duck. What technology are they using to protect that?
I don't think they're using any technology. I think it's just sitting there as a sitting duck, and that it's being guarded by these extraterrestrials from other places. Because I've seen three times where these aircraft that are diamond shaped appear within probably 100 miles in outer space terminology, 100 maybe 1,000 miles in outer space from the from the shuttles and from lab, and every time they come within 100 miles of that sucker, wham! They're dust. They become dust out there in outer space.
Well, there's a lesson to be learned too when they go up there with the shuttle and they have a mile or 7 mile long tether attached to it. Watch out for the ice crystals. Ice crystals.
Amen. And I mentioned that on my show. And
did you?
And it's easy to go to that show from last Sunday, ladies and gentlemen. It'll be there until this Sunday at 12 noon. The direct link is amd.elequity.com, and just click on it for last Sunday, the 19th day of September, and you'll have the audio presentation. 3-hour show, ladies and gentlemen, of truth about what's going on in outer space. And why aren't the governments of the United States talk about it? The Spaniards, the Brazilians, the South Americans, the Europeans,
the Mexicans,
especially the Russians, the Russian civil services, they all know about it and talk about it. Not here in the United States. Everybody laughs at anybody that says, oh, I believe in UFOs. They think we're nuts.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
They put them in movies, you know. You know, I was told there's quite a bit going on in Siberia and the Ukraine, too, in that regard. It seems to be one of the hot spots, but they're not really particular about the geography over which these battles occur. And I've reported this for the past 2 years, that there are craft coming into an underground base in St. Gallen, Switzerland. They're going into Indonesia. There's your connection to the short-legged Mac Daddy, and other places. But those are two areas that are being saturated with arrivals. Sometimes in a matter of hours, 500 ships coming in from outside. Drew, it's been very entertaining tonight, very informative, I should say, and I appreciate you being on the show. I guess I'm going to be on your show next Monday, so I'm looking forward to that, and you'll be back again next Thursday here on Evident Footprints. So in the meantime, take care, and I wish you a good night.
I'm still looking for my beef jerky.
Okay. You had to bring that
That's
up.
That's a private joke, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, Drew, take care, and I'll talk to you on Monday, okay?
God bless. Anytime.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, to all my Marines around the world, one more time, Semper Fi.
All right, Drew, that wraps it up, folks. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. In case you didn't get Drew's email or website, I should say, all his contact information is posted there on the website. Go to amd.elequity.com. Special thanks also to Wind Talkers Radio Network and over at BBS, Seth Hendrick on the sound tonight. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, Jim Murray. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.